Well, we're coming down to the conclusion of the greatest sermon ever delivered, the Sermon on the Mount. And as we come down to the conclusion, Jesus is going to do what needs to be done. Jesus is going to call for people to make a decision, to make a choice. What are you going to do based upon the words that you have just heard me deliver? You've heard it said, I think D. Bowman used to always say it, preaching that does not storm the will is not good preaching. Preaching is not meant just to inform you. Preaching is not meant for you to sit back and say, boy, that was a great sermon Jesus delivered. Wasn't that amazing? Man, it was just incredible. It's not meant for that. Preaching is meant to motivate people to change their life if their life needs to be changed. Preaching is meant to encourage and persuade people and to call people to act. It's different than most other forms of communication. You have to get people to do something that is very, very important. And that's what Jesus does at the end of the sermon. He calls people to make a decision. I've titled this sermon, Deuces Wild. And what we're going to look at is we're going to look at the fact, the three points we're going to consider. Point number one is we're going to look at there are two gates. There are not 1,000 gates. There are not a lot of choices. Jesus comes down and puts it right down. There's only two choices, guys. There's only two gates you can walk. Here's what they are, and here's where they lead. There are two trees. A tree that bears good fruit and a tree that bears bad fruit. The bad tree doesn't bear good fruit. The good tree doesn't bear bad fruit. And you don't have a tree that bears a mixture of good fruit and bad fruit. There's only two trees. There's a good tree. There's a bad tree. And then there are really only two responses. You either practice lawlessness or you obey Jesus Christ. Do you realize that there's really no partial obedience? I mostly obey. There's no partial obedience. Anything short of full obedience is flat out lawlessness, is what Jesus says. So there are two gates, there are two trees, and there are two responses. And we're going to take that last lesson next week and look a little bit more at that third point about the responses as we look at the two different foundations that we have to build on. So thankful everybody's here today. I don't know about you, but this has been a challenging message for me. Not this week, but the entire sermon. I find myself every week sitting back before I get up here, shaking my head thinking, boy, this is hard. This is tough. Jesus isn't messing around here. I have to make sure that I evaluate my life to make sure I'm doing this. And at times I find that I'm falling short. I'm not living up to this great challenge that Jesus is putting before us. And so please don't take the messages that Jesus has given us on this occasion and don't just act as if, oh, I'm doing that. Don't act as if, oh, I really don't need that mess. I've heard the Sermon on the Mount 100 times. You need to hear it 1,000 times. Because it is the most powerful sermon ever. And if it has not hit you at the core of who you are, I'll say this. If it has not shaken you at some point in this series, something is wrong with you. Because it should shake you. It's meant to shake you. It's meant to startle you. It's meant to challenge you to make sure that you are the kind of person that God wants you to be. Brothers and sisters, this is no game. No one's going to almost make it to heaven. You don't almost enter the kingdom. You either enter it or you don't. Serious words that Jesus gives us that we need to make sure are penetrating our hearts and making sure that we are the kind of people that God wants us to be. Let's look at the passage. We'll start here in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13. Where Jesus, after the conclusion of a sermon, he's coming down to the end and he says to his disciples, and I almost see Jesus saying this in a way that is imploring, begging, but almost in a way that he knows that most people that he's talking to are going to go down the wrong path. Most people are not going to choose the gate that they need to choose. Most people are not going to walk the difficult path that they need to walk. And Jesus looks out at his audience and he says, "Enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the path that will lead you to destruction. And there are many of you who will find it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life. And there are few who find it." Jesus admonishes his disciples to enter by the narrow gate. Enter by the narrow gate. If you were to vision two gates, one over here, and it is a narrow gate, and it looks like it's very difficult to go through, and you're looking down at that gate, and the path as far as you can see, and there's persecution, and there's heartache, and there's trouble, and there's struggles. You look at that gate, and you might say, "I don't want that gate." And if you look over here at the big gate, and it's all fancy, maybe it's gold, maybe it's iron, and it has emblems up there, and it says, "This is the way to the kingdom of heaven," and it looks like it would be an easy path to travel. And you might be tempted to choose this path. And Jesus knew that his followers, Jesus knew people better than any psychiatrist, any psychologist, any philosopher who has ever walked the face of the earth. Jesus knew people better than anybody, and he knew that we have a tendency to choose the easy way. And almost everything that we do, we want to choose the easy way. We don't want the difficult way. Very few people want the challenge. Very few people have two choices before them, and they choose the most difficult option. Jesus knows that the people that he's talking to, he knows that the people who are sitting in this room today and the ones standing before the crowd, he knows that we have a tendency to choose the easy way. To not do the exercising that we need to do. Choose the easy way. He knows that about us. And he implores his disciples, enter by the narrow gate. See, everybody has to make a choice. Everybody chooses a gate. You can't just look at the gates and say, "All right, there's the narrow gate and there's the wide gate, and I'm just not going to choose." By default, if you don't choose the narrow gate, you're choosing the broad way. You're choosing the easy way. Jesus says many people are going to find the broad gate over there. Very few people are going to search hard enough and long enough and have the courage to enter by that narrow gate. See, what we have a tendency of doing as people, we have a tendency of looking at the gates and not looking at where they lead. And that's challenging for us. Because if you look just at the gates, and Jesus is honest about it, but if you look just at the gates and you look at the way, you would be tempted to choose the broad gate and the easy way. But Jesus takes his disciples, "Let's look at the end. If you choose the narrow gate, you have chosen life." And so as God's people, we have to have the discernment about ourselves that we have the ability to look at the end of the road. And even though the gate might be narrow and the way might be difficult, the way leads to life. And if we can forget looking at the difficult nature of the task before us and make sure that we are looking at life, we will choose the narrow gate every time. If you choose the wide gate, you have chosen destruction. The end. You have to look at the end. What's the end? Oh, it might be paved with ease right now. It might be paved with 70 years of fun and enjoyment, or just not having to push yourself and not having to work and not having to really be the kind of person God wants you to be. But that road leads to destruction. Now notice, brothers and sisters, I love this about God. There are only two gates. Marshall has made some comments recently. He likes simplicity. He doesn't like things to be complicated. Well, Marshall, God's not complicated. There's two gates. That's it. You don't have 1,000 gates to choose from. You only have two gates, and you have two destinations, and that's the way it has always been. Look at these great moments of decision-making time that we have in the Bible. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, Moses is speaking to the people on this occasion on behalf of God. And he says, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you, how many things? Life and death, blessings and cursings. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, and that you may obey His voice, and that you may cling to Him, for He is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob to give them. Now, Moses starts off, it's not in this context that we have in the bulletin, but if you go up and you read the context of this, Moses starts out this section of his speech by telling him that the commandments that he was giving them are not mysterious. There's no mystery here. God is only giving us two choices. There's the choice of good, and there's the choice of evil. There's the choice of life, and there's the choice of death. That's it. Those are the choices that God lays before the people. Joshua basically said, there are two choices. Remember in that great speech that he gave? He says, now if it seems right to you to serve the gods on the other side of the river, or to serve the gods of the Ammonites and the Canaanites in whose land you currently dwell, you make that decision. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What does that mean? There's two choices. You're either going to serve the Lord, or you're going to serve some other god. You're going to serve the Lord or not. That's the choices. And Joshua says, as far as my family goes, we will serve the Lord. On top of Mount Carmel, when Elijah is getting ready to have a contest with the gods and the prophets of Baal. And there are over 400 prophets of Baal. He's getting ready to have this great contest. What was the great contest for? Was the great contest only to show God's power, or was the great contest trying to get them to make a commitment, to make a decision? Elijah says to the people, he came before all the people and he says, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people answered him not a word. Now these people are curious to me, because even at this point they don't want to choose, do they? They're given the choice. There's two choices. If God is God, serve Him. If Baal is God, serve Him. And they don't even say a single word. Elijah asked, I think, a very powerful question. How long are you guys going to falter between two opinions? It's not that complicated. As Moses said, it's not that mysterious. If God is God, then serve Him. If Baal is God, then serve Him. Jesus has already said in this lesson, He says you cannot serve two masters, you can only serve one master. Isn't that sort of the same thing? Jesus says, look, there are really only two masters. There's God and the devil. And you can't serve both. You will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God. I mean, you just can't do it. See, it's not that hard. It's not that mysterious. It's not that complicated. You can serve God or you can serve the devil. You can serve God or you can serve money. Now, there are a whole bunch of different options up here on the devil's side. But either you serve God or you don't. That's what it comes down to. He's also said in this sermon, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Do you realize what that means? How many things can you seek first? Only one thing can be first in your life, right? Only one thing can be first in your life. It's that simple. So, you do not seek God first and seek work first. It doesn't happen. You do not seek work God first and seek family first. That's even harder. You do not seek God first and seek your hobby first. It just can't happen. It's not that difficult to understand. Now, it's difficult to do, but it's not that difficult to understand. Jesus, in this sermon itself, has gone through the point of, hey, look, it's either God or not. It's either seeking God first or not. That's it. That's the only options that you have before you. And brothers and sisters, God knows the choice that we make. Jesus' teaching was so challenging. I want you to notice what happens in Luke chapter 13 and verse 25. He went through the cities and villages teaching and journeying toward Jerusalem. Then one said to him, "Lord, are there few who are going to be saved?" He sees where they are. He's walking through. He sees that we have large crowds, that we have very few people who are actually making the commitment and believing the message that Jesus has called them to believe. Many people want to go say goodbye to their parents. Many people want to go bury the dead. Many people want to go take care of business. But very few people want to pick up their cross and follow after him. Jesus said to them, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able to enter." The answer to Jesus' question was yes. Are only a few people going to be saved? The answer is yes. It's yes because we know that's what he said in the Sermon on the Mount. It's yes because of the context in which Jesus answered that question. Now, few is a relative term. I understand that. Many is a relative term. But the point is that there are going to be a lot of people who are going to think they're on the right track and aren't going to be on the right path. There are going to be a lot of people who aren't going to put in the effort necessary. In the overall scope of things, only a few people are going to make it. Now, I'm not talking three or four or five. But in comparison to everybody who has lived, heaven is not going to be a highly populated place compared to how many people have lived on this earth. Jesus himself says it. The reason few will enter the narrow gate is because you have to strive to get in. That word strive, we don't use that word very much. Most of the time it's translated in this idea of striving or working hard. In John chapter 18 and verse 36, Jesus is before Pilate. And he says, "My kingdom is not of this earth. If my kingdom were of this earth, my servants would do what? They'd fight." That sound easy to you? My servants would fight. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 25, Paul says, "Anyone who competes in athletics competes for a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown." The newer translations use the word compete, but I like the way the old King James terminology is. Anyone, instead of competes, anyone who striveth for the mastery. Anybody who wants to conquer something. Anybody who wants to be the one person who wins at the end, striveth for the mastery, competes hard. That's the same word that Jesus uses that says why most people are not going to enter is because you have to strive to get in. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 12, again, it uses the word fight, where Paul tells Timothy to fight the good fight. Lay hold of eternal life. Make the confession in the presence of many witnesses. It should not come as a shock to us that most people choose the broad path. In Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5, the Lord looked down upon the earth, and the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thought of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created for the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now how few people made it? 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 20 says, "When once the divine long-suffering waited in the days of Noah," now most all the kids know this answer, "while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is 8 souls, were saved through water." In Noah's day, only 8 souls were saved. That is shocking. What if I were to say, there's only 8 people in this building right now who are going to make it? That shock you? Would that shock you to strive to enter in? Or would that make you give up? That's a tough choice. I mean, some people are prone to give up when they think it's too hard. I'm not going to make it anyway. I'm just going to forget it. That's not the answer. What if I were to tell you there's only 8 people in Northwest Indiana who are going to make it into the kingdom? There's only 8 people who are going to be the type of people described in this text. Only 8 people in Northwest Indiana. That's it. That's even more shocking. What about 8 people in Indiana, or 8 people in the country, or 8 people in the world? There's only a few. History has shown that most people don't put forth the effort to please God. They think it's too difficult, too challenging. And it is a tragedy that more of us don't work harder at it. In the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, this is the reading that I had Larry read, there were less than 10 righteous people. That's a very interesting story. I can just imagine how this conversation goes. As Larry was reading it to us, just the courage, I guess, of Abraham, but then sort of the meekness and the courage. It sort of goes back and forth between courage and meekness there with Abraham, I think. For 50. Come on, there's got to be 50. There's cities down there. You've got to be able to find 50. If you find 50, okay, I won't be sure. 45? He gets all the way down to 10. And God says, if there are 10 righteous people down there, I will not destroy the cities. I will save the cities on account of the 10. But only 4 people escaped. I put escaped in quotes. Because we know that one of the escapees turned into a pillar of salt not too long after that. And we know that 2 of the escapees committed such a heinous act with their father that 2 nations were born that were a thorn in the flesh of the Israelites for a long time. The Moabites and the Ammonites. So did any other really escape? I don't know. But very few people are righteous on the earth in the days of Noah, in the days of Lot. And the Lord looks down today to find out, are there any righteous down there? And I am here to tell you, sometimes I'm afraid the number that he will find are less than the number that we think he'll find. Abraham thought, surely there's 50, right? I'll start with 50. Surely there's 50. He gets all the way down to 10. I don't know if he walked away comfortable that the cities were going to be saved. Sure, there's 10. Come on, there's got to be 10. When God could find very, very few. During the time of the judges, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Nobody was doing the right thing. When the kingdom was carried away into captivity, only a remnant remained. Shocking to go back and look at history and look at how few people are doing the right thing. Few people are pleasing God. Now, I told you this was challenging, and I told you last week, if I were here, if I were on that mountain, if I were listening to that sermon, I would have thought, this is tough. This is hard. And that's when Jesus says, ask, seek, and knock. I'll give you what it takes to get in if you're willing to ask, seek, and knock for it. Now, those who were listening to this sermon, not only does history tell us that this is something that we should understand, that few people choose the difficult way, few people choose the way of righteousness, but even in this sermon, the people who were sitting here listening to this, this statement of Jesus would not have shocked them if they were listening. Because Jesus has spent the entire sermon narrowing the gate and showing how difficult the way is. Jesus has said only the people who can enter are those who are poor in spirit, the mournful, the people who are willing to cry over their own sins, the meek. That's it. I'm narrowing it down to these people. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Well, that takes a lot of people out of the equation. I'm narrowing it down. The merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who are willing to withstand persecution. You see how the gate is narrowing in Jesus' sermon here? He says, the truly righteous, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. See, he narrows it down. Not only are those who don't murder, but those who don't hate or call names. Not only those who don't commit adultery, but he narrows the gate to those who don't lust. Not only those who don't swear oaths, and some ways will get out of their telling the truth, but those who don't lie at all, let their yes be yes and their no, no. He's narrowing the gate. He narrows the gate to those who are willing to go the extra mile. The one who is willing, not the one who is willing to love their friends and hate their enemies. He narrows the gate to the one who is willing to love their enemy and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. The broad gate says, it's okay if you give and if you pray and you fast to be seen by men. Jesus narrows the gate and he says, no, the only ones who are going to go in are the ones who give, fast, and pray to be seen by God and God only. The broad gate is filled with those who won't forgive. The narrow gate has those who will forgive. The broad gate might have those who lay up for themselves treasures on earth. The narrow gate says only those who lay up for themselves treasures in heaven. The broad gate is filled with those who worry about material things. The narrow gate is filled with those who don't worry about those things. The broad gate is filled with those who seek everything else first. The narrow gate is for those who seek the kingdom first. The broad gate is filled with those who judge harshly. The narrow gate is for those who judge with compassion and mercy and righteous judgment. The broad gate is for the one who thinks he can do it on his own. The narrow gate is for the one who asks, seeks, and knocks. You see, Jesus has been spending the entire sermon telling the people the gate is narrower than you think. The Pharisees aren't going in. That in and of itself was shocking. Another occasion, Jesus says the rich guys are going to have a hard time making it too. Then who can go in? But with God, all things are possible. With men, it is impossible. Well, there are two gates and there are also two trees. Here's one of the problems. Not only is the one gate small and the one gate wide, the one gate is a difficult path and the one gate is an easy path, but there are false prophets who are pointing you this direction. See, there are false prophets who are mislabeling the gates. The gate over here, the broad gate, doesn't say at the top of it, this gate will lead you to destruction in hell. The devil doesn't do that. You know what he says? He says, hey, this is the way to life over here. He's been doing that to the beginning. He did it with Eve. And he's not stopped ever since. They might label this gate, hey, this isn't the narrow gate that leads to life. That's the narrow-minded gate. Well, I don't want to be narrow-minded. I don't want to be down the narrow-minded gate. Let me go over here. And this is the open-minded, loving gate. I'm going to go into this gate. See, false prophets are going to come. False prophets are going to come teaching us, and they're mislabeling the gate. They're not being honest with us. They're hiding the truth from people. Matthew 7 verse 15 says, beware. After he says, enter the narrow gate, he says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. Jesus says, beware of the false prophets. They're mislabeling the gates. Now notice again, there are only two types of trees. There's a tree that bears good fruit and a tree that bears bad fruit. There are false prophets and true prophets. There's not a guy who is a true teacher, but just a little bit of falseness. You're either a true teacher or you are a false teacher. You are either leading people down the straight and narrow, the difficult way over here, telling them this is the way to life, or you're allowing them to believe that they can get to heaven going through this broad gate. The broad gate that allows self-righteousness. The broad gate that allows you to hate your brother. The broad gate that focuses on the externals instead of the internals. And let me just make this point, brothers and sisters. He's not talking about the religious people and the total heathen who isn't even trying. And we know it's a foregone conclusion. He's talking about all people who think they're spiritual. There's a bunch of people on the broad path. And this is the challenge to me, and this is the challenge to you. Not to be deceived thinking we're on the straight and narrow, doing the right things, and we have the kingdom character that's mentioned for us in this chapter, when in fact we're on the broad way. Matthew chapter 24, false prophets have always been a part of God's story. Matthew 24 and verse 11, you think about in the past, you think in Ahab's time, all kinds of, there are false prophets all the time. Matthew 24 and verse 11 says, "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, because lawlessness will abound, and the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end will be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then shall come the end." Notice, false prophets will be successful. It says, "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many." The false prophets are good at what they do. They're successful. The result of this false teaching is lawlessness and a lack of love. Not doing what God says. Lawlessness and a lack of love for other people. Now what is the answer? The answer is endurance. But he who endures to the end will be saved. Isn't that one of the hardest things about life? I find it is for me. I find endurance is difficult. Anybody else have a problem with endurance? Anybody ever start a good idea, start something good and not finish it? You ever start, whether it's reading through the Bible in a year or whether it's making a list of things you're thankful for? That's one that I've failed on. I started and didn't finish. Start things. See, it's hard to endure. But that's the requirement that God puts before us. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1 it says, "But there are also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false prophets among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Many will follow the destructive ways of false teachers." Peter tells us that 2,000 years ago. Now the biggest weapon is deceit. They're deceptive words. That has been the biggest weapon the devil has ever had. It's what he started out with Adam and Eve, right? Eve. "You will not surely die. God just knows that the day of you eat of it, you're going to be smart like him." That's why he's told you not to do it. Deceptive words. Lying to people. Brothers and sisters, if I ever lie to you about what's in God's book, please tell me about it. I don't want to tell you anything that's not true. I want to tell you just what's in this book and this book only. It is the words of life. I don't want to twist them or deceive them in any way. The false teacher, how does he describe him? Beware of false teacher. He is what? He is a wolf clothed in sheepskin. Oh, what does a sheep look like? That's a harmless little sheep, right? I know one of the stuffed animals that has been passed down in our family is a little lamb. And Lammy is his name. And Lammy has been cuddled by many children. And I don't know this for a fact, and I'm not going to put my wife on the spot or any of my kids on the spot. I don't think we have a wolf stuffed animal. No offense to the wolves. But we just don't have a stuffed animal that looks like a wolf. You just don't cuddle with wolves. And what the sheep is, the sheep, the false teacher, inside it is a ravenous wolf trying to destroy you. But it knows you won't cuddle with it. No one cuddles with a wolf. No one pets a wolf. And so in order to draw you close to Him, He clothes Himself and makes Himself look like a sheep. And then you'll get close to Him. Then you'll cuddle with it.
And then He will destroy you. He's a ravenous wolf. 1 John chapter 4, verse 1 says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." We need to test everything that we learn, everything that we've been taught our entire lives, against the truth of God. And we need to do that continually. Don't take it for granted, brothers and sisters, that we have the way figured out and that we know everything that we need to know. There's a group of people in the New Testament that were just like that. And Jesus says, unless you're better than they are, you're not going to enter in. We have to continually find out and make sure that we're not being deceived. We need to make sure that what people are teaching us is in harmony with God's Word. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 6 says, "I marvel that you are turning away so soon from Him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another, but there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we, an apostle or an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. If an angel from heaven or an apostle on earth taught things that were contrary to the message of Jesus Christ, they were to be accursed. The message has been delivered. We can't go away from it. It's right here. This is what we have to follow. This tells us how to get to the narrow path. And you will know these false teachers by the fruit of their teaching. What are they teaching? Does it match up with what I have here? And that's one thing that I've been telling and emphasizing a lot. Does what we teach match the story of the Bible and the stories in the Bible? If what anyone teaches does not match the story of the Bible, nor does it match the stories in the Bible, then what they're teaching is wrong. The story and the stories cannot be wrong. Well, there are two responses. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 21 said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" The two responses are to do the will of God or not. To live lawlessly or to live following God's will. These are people doing spiritual things in the name of the one that they call Lord. And Jesus doesn't argue with them. He doesn't say, "You haven't prophesied in my name. You haven't done these things in my name." But he says that they have been practicing lawlessness. And here's where we get to a point. As we sit down here and we think about what Jesus has said so far. Many people will live their entire lives thinking they are on the right path, only to find out when it is too late that they have been deceived by somebody, and the devil is always behind them. Can you think of a sadder thing than that? Can you think of something that would be more sad than for you to live your entire life thinking, "I'm doing the right things. I'm on the right path. I'm going to heaven. I'm going to church 3 times a week. I'm giving like I'm supposed to. I'm studying my Bible at least 2 or 3 times a week. In addition, I'm doing my lessons for my Bible class. I'm on my way to heaven. I'm going there." And then
we go before the Lord at the end, and with the entire group of witnesses that He lays out for us in Hebrews chapter 11, standing there, He turns to us and says, "I never knew you. You didn't have the kingdom character. I gave you a good sermon. I told you what you needed to do. I told you how you needed to live. I told you it was going to be hard. I told you you were going to have to strive for it, fight for it. And you just let life go and drift it along and let the wind take you wherever. You didn't lay hold of it. You didn't live every day of your life thinking, I got to get in. I got to make it. You gave it a half-hearted attempt. You didn't put me first. Depart from me, I never knew you." Now, the lesson is meant to be challenging. Jesus meant it to be challenging. But there's always hope, isn't there? Isn't that what Jesus said? If you ask, if you seek, you will find it. If you knock, it will be open. But no one is going to accidentally make it to heaven. No one. When you get there, folks, it's going to have to be because you've done everything you can do to get there. And when you make it, you're still going to be an unprofitable servant, because we are saved by the grace of God. But Jesus says, "Narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it." Everybody can find it. But you need to ask yourself, I told you that these sermons, I'm going to ask you to evaluate your life, not look at my life or anybody else's life, look at your life, and make a good self-evaluation. Rob mentioned it this morning, that when we talked about the plank in the eye and the speck in the brother's eye, I said one of the greatest things we can develop in our own life and in our children's life is the ability to self-evaluate. The ability to look at their own lives and find out, do I have a plank in my life? Do I have a speck in my eye? I'm calling everybody here today to look at their lives and find out, are you truly seeking God first? Do you have the character that's described in this lesson that Jesus delivered? If not, you got some work to do. If you need to make some kind of a public confession, you can do that. If you just need prayer, say, you know what? I haven't been striving to enter the gate. I've just been assuming I'm on the path for a long time, and I haven't really been working at it. I've just been floating along. And I need to strive to enter. I need to make sure I'm out. I need your prayers. We can do that for you. But as we are going, I was going to have two other projectors here, one with a narrow gate, one with a wide gate up here, but that just didn't work out for me today. So I'm going to have to use your imagination. There's a narrow gate over here. It's difficult. It looks like it's going to get hard to get into. You might have to turn sideways. As you look through, there might be some stairs to climb. There may be some very difficult paths to go through. And over here, there's a big old wide gate. It's labeled Way to Eternal Life. But in this gate, it's only going to lead to death. Everybody right now, make your choice as we stand and sing.